Zena, I'll always love you.
Everyone to Xena and Uber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who has been following this podcast. We're now to episode number 96. This podcast shows for all the Xena Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So, hey there, hi there, and hello everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. Me, myself, and I, well, we're going to skip that and get back to it. Just don't want to know. But we're off to a start this year, so let's get into the show and get into some of the juicy details that we've got for you. Okay, by the turning of the great infinite page, you know that it's time for the book recommendation. And in this week's book recommendation, I've sorted it out for myself, is called Golden Seal by Jill McKnight. And this is over at Boldstroke Books, and I'll have a link as usual. And it says in the description, when Amy Fortune returns to her childhood home, she discovers something sinister in the air. But is it former lover Leon Garul stalking her or protecting her? Amy Fortune and Leon Garul were teenage lovers. Now, years later, Amy returns to Little Dip, the Garul home valley, to help her aunt finish a botanical project. Except Little Dip is no longer the happy place of Amy's childhood memories. There's something sinister in the woods. And why hasn't Leon moved on? Why does she still dog Amy's every move? As more and more of the Garul family arrive for a special hunting weekend, parts of the puzzle come together, and Amy's fears escalate as she moves closer to the truth and the secret that has eluded her since childhood. So, check it on out. And in the movie review, once again, brought to you by your friendly neighborhood movie buff, namely me, we have The Baby Formula, and it is called so because of the following description. In this feisty, fun, and fantastical comedy, two lesbians in love become pregnant at the same time, with sperm created from one another's stem cells, and embark on a wild adventure with a bit of unexpected family drama as their parents respond to the news. Featuring a pair of tremendous performances from co-stars Megan Fallonblock and Angela Vint, The Baby Formula is a hilarious and unique movie. Amidst all the laughs, The Baby Formula is as poignant and uplifting as a newborn babe, or two. And this movie was winner of the Best LGBT Film in Nashville Film Festival, winner of the Audience Award in Toronto Film Festival Inside Out, and winner of the Best Performance at the Toronto Film Festival Inside Out. So, there you go.
Bring her around! We're going to join them.
No, we only wish that we could join them, as all of you are gearing up for the XenaCon, and I wish you all the best and have fun out there. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe. Make sure you take plenty of pictures, and if anybody does any interviews and you want them aired, or if you get any good photos and you'd like to participate and send them on in for the show, please do so at xena.uber@gmail.com, as usual. But over at the Creation Entertainment site, thanks to Sharon and her posting of the information, it says Lucy Lawless and Renee O'Connor are at the Xena 210 convention, which I'm sure you all know. And Lucy and Renee will do their duo spot on Friday. And Lucy will do her solo spot on that day as well. Renee doing hers on Sunday and her photo ops and autographs as well. And also there's a special screening at the Xena convention on the 5th through the 7th for the Spartacus Blood and Sand. And thanks to Stars who will be screening that episode, which if you haven't checked it out, get over on Stars on the internet and download it and watch it. It is, yes, it's quite entertaining, It's made for, obviously, for mature audiences. So if you're under 18 or if your mom and dad don't agree with you watching stuff like that, sneak it in. Nobody will know the wiser. So on with the show. Okay, so we've covered Xena and the Xena convention. Renee O'Connor at the convention. We don't have any updates on her website except for her beginning of the year comments. And we've covered all the bases except for me. And the only thing going on with me is, well, I've had another little minor setback with the running. We are back to the shin splint. So, my kneecaps have come back, and we've come through the negotiations, and we are on talking terms and working things out. But my shins have decided to buck up and say they want better pay. So, got to work through that first and see how that goes, and then hopefully get into it, because counting down, folks, 10 months. Come November, you know, I got to fly out. We bought our airfare. We bought our tickets about 2 weeks ago now. And heavens forbid, but man, that's a good chunk of change. And as most of you who are on the other side of the world know, to fly back home for me is just, yeah, then no wonder it takes me every 2 years to go home. It's it takes me that long to sell my legs and grow new ones. But not only have my lovely partner and I bought tickets for ourselves, but I've had quite a few people jump in on the bandwagon who want to go because they want me to play tourist guide for them. So my boss and her husband is going, one of my coworkers and her husband is going, and then one of my patient's daughter is going with us because she wants to celebrate her 50th birthday over there when we're doing our cross-country trip. And then my coworker's sister might be coming along too. So this is going to turn out into one of those, National Lampoon's Vacation movies where I should give like an advance warning to Wally World. Because it's going to be scary, folks. But I've got 10 months to gear up, and hopefully everything with God's blessing will be right on the money. Look, if I've got to run it, crawl it, walk it, you know, limp it, I'll do it. You know, I'm determined to do this because this is one of my things off the bucket list. But also for the fact that, like I said, I will be doing it to raise money for hopefully cancer research for Lance Armstrong's sponsorship. If I can't get in there, then don't know what I'm going to do, but because then I won't have entry, and that's really going to suck. But I'm looking forward to that, and everybody, I've got a lot of people already lined up saying that they'll sponsor me, and I hope some of you out there in the Xenaverse will join in and sponsor me for a worthwhile cause, not only to see me suffer, but also for raising money for cancer awareness. So that's it. I'm off my little Matchbox soapbox, and we're going to get into the show.
Come and get
A Matter of Pride, Part 11.
Mama, Grandma got cookies.
Dory informed her mother seriously.
Big.
Oh, really? Gabrielle replied, stroking the toddler's hair. She was lying in bed, ostensibly relaxing while Xena checked on the progress of the pallet and greeted her troops. It was full dark out, but as Xena had reminded her, she'd have time to wait while the other bards were performing. Staying where she was, quietly resting, was a very appealing idea to Gabrielle.
How come you didn't bring me one, huh?
She asked her daughter, who was dressed in a little red outfit that looked adorable on her, a nice contrast to her dark hair. Dory had Biddy Boo encircled by one arm, the tattered doll resting mutely next to her.
How come?
Dory warbled.
Mama get cookies?
Not unless you get them for me. Mama can't get up and get any,
Gabrielle explained.
Should we call Grandma?
Yes.
You think she'll bring cookies?
Yes.
A soft knock came at the door. Gabrielle glanced around, then exhaled as she remembered she no longer had her staff. Her eyes searched for a substitute. Then better sense intervened and reminded her that bad guys probably would not be politely knocking.
Yes.
The door cracked open, and Micah slowly poked his head inside.
Hey,
Gabrielle greeted him.
Come in. We don't bite.
She glanced at her daughter.
Well, most of us don't.
Micah slid inside, then came over and knelt at the bedside. His face bore bruises, the old one and newer, but he seemed relatively unharmed otherwise.
I came to thank you,
he said,
and to say how sorry I am that you got hurt. I couldn't warn you.
Gabriel put a hand on his arm.
It's okay,
she told him.
I wish they hadn't decided to get you involved in this. You were only trying to help us.
Micah bowed his head a moment.
I know,
he said.
But the shame of it is...
He looked at her.
I was too frightened to defy them.
Gabriel gazed at him compassionately.
Would it have made a difference if you tried?
She asked. Dory mouthed her stuffed toy, watching in curious silence. Micah paused and half shrugged.
I don't know.
He answered in a low voice.
I never will know. I watched them beat you, and I should have tried to do something.
A flash of memory suddenly flooded Gabriel's mind, of a much younger self, having the same second thoughts.
Xena!
Gabriel ran towards the ledge, where she had last seen a friend. A band of thugs had overtaken them on the road, and Xena pushed her down behind a bush before she met their attack. She watched helpless as they overwhelmed the furiously fighting warrior and bore her to the ground, only to be tossed off as Xena's body arched and rolled. They had come right back, though, and the dust had risen, hiding the fighting from Gabriel's eyes until it disappeared, along with the men and Xena, over a ledged embankment she didn't know the bottom of.
Xena!
Gabriel yelled desperately as she reached the edge and fell to her knees, peering fearfully over and hoping her friend was all right. Below her, she couldn't see anything, except for a fast-moving brown river and a lot of broken branches where bodies had fallen.
See!
Gabriel looked downstream, standing up and shading her eyes. She could see bobbing figures moving away from her, and panic struck her.
Xena!
With her pounding heart, with her heart pumping, she started to run down the bank.
Hey!
A voice brought her up sharply, and she stopped, rolling around and looking for the source.
Xena!
Down here!
Gabriel ran back to the embankment and flopped down onto her belly, inching over to peer over the edge. She jumped when a muddy face popped up in front of hers and yelled in pure reaction,
"Yeah!"
"Hush!"
Xena glared at her as she hauled herself up over the ledge and slumped down next to Gabriel, her drenched body covered in cuts and scratches.
"Bastards!
You're hurt!"
Gabriel dabbed at a bleeding cut on Xena's leg with a bit of her skirt.
"Leave it alone. I'm fine."
"No, you're not. You're dripping blood all over the place, Xena,"
Gabriel protested.
"I'll go get some bandages, or your herbs, or..."
"Gabriel."
Gabriel had, for once, ignored the warning and pressed her hands down over the cut, stopping the bleeding with wads of fabric.
"You could hold this here, but it's attached to me. Maybe you could cut off a piece."
"Gabriel."
"Xena, you can't pretend you're not gushing blood. It's all over me."
"Shh."
Xena had put a hand over her mouth.
"I am."
"Okay. Thanks for stopping it. Now would you just relax?" Gabriel lowered her head and bit the inside of her lip.
"It's the least I could do," she said. "It's not like I can do anything else but hang around like a bump on a log."
"Yeah. Well, I fight. You talk, remember?"
Xena said.
"Xena, that's not..."
Gabriel kept her hands pressed against the cut.
"I should do more to help you. It's not fair. Maybe I could learn to throw rocks or something."
A hand had fallen unexpectedly on her shoulder.
"Gabriel, you don't need to do that,"
Xena said. "The minute you pick up a weapon, you become a target. You don't want that to happen, do you?" Gabriel sighed heavily.
"I don't know,"
she admitted.
"I hate not being able to do anything."
"Well, I don't want that to happen," Xena said. "So you let me do the fighting."
Gabriel looked at her, unsure if she was willing to keep up to their arrangement. She found unexpected compassion in Xena's eyes, as the warrior wiped the bit of mud with the back of her hand and removed the water plant hanging on her shoulder.
"Trust me," Xena said in a quiet, knowing voice. "You don't want to be a fighter, Gabriel. It only gets you hurt."
Gabriel lifted her hands carefully, making sure the cut had stopped bleeding.
"I guess,"
she had to admit, seeing the bruises on her friend's skin.
"Want me to go get Argo?"
Xena drew in her breath and started to speak, then paused.
Yeah,
she said. "That'd be great."
"Okay."
Gabriel got into her knees.
"Where are we going next?"
"Up into the mountains."
"The villagers said there were Amazons there. Is that true?"
"There used to be."
"Do you think we'll see him?"
Gabriel had been sidetracked, I've heard so many stories about them. I'd love to meet some.
They avoid strangers, Gabrielle. Don't get your hopes up. Gabrielle got to her feet and brushed her now blood-stained skirt off.
Okay.
She pushed down a disappointment.
Will you tell me everything you know about them? It'd be the next best thing.
We'll see. A wistful, faint smile appeared on Gabrielle's face. Xena had, of course, been right about taking up arms, and the consequences of that. And wrong, as it happened, about them meeting Amazons. But she wouldn't have had it any other way.
Not everyone's cut out for this kind of thing, Micah, she told the boy. If you try to stop them, they might have hurt you, or even killed you, and I still would have gotten beat up.
Micah exhaled.
I know.
He looked at her.
Xena would have stopped them.
Oh, yes,
Gabrielle agreed readily.
In a heartbeat.
Boo?
Dory heard a favorite name.
Mama, get Boo. Come back. Get cookies. Go fly.
The toddler demanded.
Go now!
Oh, you're such a little tyrant, the bard chuckled. Listen to you giving me orders. Who do you think you are, huh?
Dory grinned and stuck a finger in her mouth, then pointed at her mother.
Mama!
That surprised a laugh out of Gabrielle, brief due to the pain in her gut.
I don't like the sound of that,
she scolded her child, then glanced at Micah. He was watching Dory with a curious expression.
She's adorable,
he offered.
She thinks so.
Gabrielle put a finger on Dory's nose and watched as the toddler swiped at it with both hands.
Don't you?
Mama!
Dory crawled over and snuggled up against Gabrielle's side, kicking her feet against the covers to make a comfortable spot for herself. Gabrielle curled an arm around her and hugged her, giving her a kiss on top of her head.
I thought she'd be knocked out after what she went through today, but she's had her nap, and now she's raring to go again.
She's yours?
Gabrielle looked up, a trifle puzzled.
Sure.
Micah blinked and studied the child.
She, looks a bit like Xena.
Yeah,
Gabrielle smiled, completely declining to elaborate.
She sure does.
Time for a change of subject.
So, tell me about what happened to you. I hear you got rescued by two friends of ours?
Micah tore his eyes from Dory and scrubbed his face with one hand.
Yes, the Amazons.
He hesitated.
Are they all like that?
Oh boy.
Some are, some aren't.
Gabrielle temporized.
What'd they do?
Might as well know the worst, right?
Right. You're my Alicia.
Xena tucked the words inside her and savored them. Guess it pays to have a poet as a partner, huh? She let her thoughts float for a bit, reasoning she was due a little mental rest after the day they'd had. Already, as most of her adventures did, the details were fading a little, losing the vibrant, emotional impact she'd felt while they were trapped in replacing it with a deep sense of relief that the ordeal was past and they were safe. It was behind them, after all, and they still had a long road to walk before they could leave Athens behind and head back home. It had made her think about some things she conscientiously blocked out of her mind for a while, though. The year at home had allowed her to let thoughts of death, hers or Gabrielle's, fade, and coming into Marketplace, knowing the bard had been taken, had brought the fear home with a vengeance. When they'd been trapped in the storage room, though, Xena had found herself facing the death of all of them with a cross between fear on what would happen next and an almost shameful sense of relief. Relief that neither she nor the bard would have to face the loss and the empty loneliness of living without half of their souls. Relief that Dory wouldn't be left an orphan, though she knew her family would take care of the child, to wonder always why her parents had gone without her. Death was something that came to everyone. Xena knew that. It was part of what made them all human. And she knew that someday she'd have to face death of everyone close to her, unless she died first. The warrior exhaled. She was glad they'd escaped fate this time. But if they hadn't, she acknowledged silently, it might have been the best of the worst possibilities.
You're my Alicia.
Xena smiled and shook her head.
You've always been mine.
She spoke silently to her partner. And who knows? Maybe between the two of us, we'll end up creating an afterlife for ourselves that matches what we have in this one. She knew she was crossing a line. She didn't care. It was time to start looking forward again.
Xena?
The warrior had been leaning against a tree in the courtyard, arms crossed to her chest, her angular face outlined in the fluttering torchlight they were working by, and she hadn't heard anyone approach.
Xena!
Pony waved the hand in front of the unusually inattentive blue eyes.
Hello? Athens to the royal consort. Anyone in the hut?
With a tiny shake of her head, Xena straightened and turned her gaze to Eponin.
Yeah? What's up with you?
Pony asked, conversationally. She walked over and leaned against a tree next to the warrior.
You've been acting like a goat in heat since you came out here.
I was thinking.
Xena gave her an evil look.
About what? The next festival of Dionysus? You're grinning like a cat.
Pony snorted. Just something Gabriel and I were talking about.
All right.
Xena gazed over her head.
Aren't you done with that damn thing yet?
Pony turned to regard the project.
Almost, she said. Gotta make sure it looks good.
Xena's eyebrows lifted.
What are those things hanging off of it?
Snails.
Snails?
Yeah.
Pony handed her one.
We found them in the market. F figured, since we didn't have our usual stuff, these looked nice and make lots of good noise.
Xena examined the snail, which was large and brightly colored.
Nice.
She peered inside it.
We took the snail out.
Pony gave her a look.
Give us a break.
Yeah? Where'd you put them all?
The Amazon weapon master eyed her wearily.
In that pail over there.
Why?
Xena started walking towards the spot.
I'll give them to Gabrielle.
Pony stood rooted in one spot for a moment, then hurried to catch up to Xena's longer strides.
What the Hades is she going to do with them?
The warrior picked up the bucket and examined the contents.
Snail stew, Xena said briskly. Now, did I see grubs for sale in that little cart?
She rubbed her jaw thoughtfully.
Or were those dried bees?
Pony's jaw dropped.
Want to come by our room for dinner after the show?
The warrior asked.
I'm sure there'll be enough.
But...
Pony flushed as her voice broke.
You eat those?
Sure. Xena plucked one from the bucket and popped it into her mouth, giving it a couple of chews and then swallowing.
Yum.
She watched the Amazon's face, intrigued by the shady green it was turning.
Want one?
Pony's eyes went very big and very round.
Ugh!
She couldn't prevent her face from twisting into a grimace of horror. Xena held her politely interested look for a moment.
More.
Then let her face relax into a wicked grin as she held up the not-quite-dead snail she palmed into her hand.
Gotcha.
A blink.
You son of a...
Pony snatched the bucket from her and went to dump its contents all over the warrior's leather-covered chest.
I'll give you, snail, you...
Xena leaped nimbly out of the way and laughed as Pony almost overbalanced in her efforts to dump the unhappy animals on her.
Urgh!
Pony bumped into a tree and bounced off, then just started laughing as well.
Damn it, Xena. What got into you?
She complained, tossing the bucket down and putting her hands on her hips, as the warrior reached up and grasped an overhead branch, hanging from it and swinging just a little.
I don't know.
Xena watched the other Amazons finish their work on a partner's royal couch.
Just glad everything turned out all right, I guess.
She admitted, giving Pony a sideways look.
We were in a pretty tight place a few times in there.
She had no real idea why she was confiding this to Pony, except that she harbored a liking for the tough, blunt Amazon, and the words seemed to want to escape from her. Pony blinked a little, seeming a bit startled. Then she leaned back against a tree and considered.
How tight?
She asked cautiously. Xena exhaled. We were stuck in a dead-end corridor, in a storage room we found after I got Gabrielle out of her cell. The fire came down the hall. We couldn't get out.
Ugh.
Eponin pursed her lips.
Boy, that sucks. I hate when that happens.
Xena nodded.
Sure does. Burning to death never has been a favorite of mine.
They were both silent for a few moments.
What'd Gab say about it?
Pony ventured.
Did she know what was going on?
Yeah, she knew.
Xena found herself smiling again. She said as long as we were together, it didn't matter to her. The sound of torches fluttering in the wind was very loud in the silence. They both watched other Amazons lift the pallet, apparently satisfied with their work, and carry it over to the front of the inn. Finally, the Amazon stirred, releasing a breath.
What does it feel like?
Pony turned and looked curiously at her.
Having someone believe in you that much?
Again? Xena answered softly after a pause. Her eyes gazed off into the distance, seeing something far outside an inn courtyard in Athens. She shook her head a little.
It's...
The words came slowly and with difficulty.
Incredible.
She stopped there, finding nothing else to say about it. The Amazon reached up and put a hand on Xena's shoulder.
Xena?
Her face was quiet and serious.
I know lousy stuff's happened, but you guys came out on top of it.
Xena's eyes twinkled gently, and she nodded in agreement.
Couldn't have happened to two better people.
Pony finished, blushing a little at the sentimentality of it.
Thanks.
Xena replied,
I'm glad things worked out for you and F, too.
Pony rolled her eyes.
With the help of Her Majesty's ever so gentle poke in the butt. Yeah.
She muttered. They exchanged looks and a very quick, almost embarrassed grins.
Hey!
Effie wiped the sweat off her brow. Are you two gonna just stand there lazing around, or can we get some help here?
Uh-oh.
Pony pushed off the tree.
Here comes trouble.
Xena released a branch and dusted off her hands.
Nah, Gabrielle's still inside. I'll go get her.
They both chuckled as he walked towards the inn.
Did you say thank you to Grandma for bringing cookies?
Gabrielle asked her daughter.
Mama!
Jory reached for the cake.
Gimme!
What do you say?
The bard held it just out of her reach.
Mama!
Dory seemed frustrated, perhaps tired from a long, active day.
No good!
Say please,
Gabrielle gently insisted.
Come on.
Please!
Dory lolled against her mother's side and begged.
Want cake!
Good girl.
Gabrielle handed her a chunk.
Now say thank you to Grandma.
Dory stuffed the cake into her mouth and gave her grandmother a round-eyed look. She pointed at Serene. Serene chuckled wearily and took a seat on the edge of the bed.
How are you feeling, cutie pie?
She asked the bard, who was dividing the edible booty between herself and the child.
You look a little ragged around the edges.
Gabrielle watched Dory launch into a piece of fragrant spice cake before she glanced up at the innkeeper.
I am,
she admitted with a wry smile, breaking off a piece of cake for herself and tasting it.
Xena won't give me anything for the pain because of my head bump.
Smart girl. Serene nodded briskly.
You do what she says. Don't I always?
Gabrielle asked innocently, taking another bite of cake. Serene's eyebrows lifted.
Do you? Where was I when this happened? She teased. I must have missed it.
Gabrielle grinned, then she tucked a slice of cold lamb into a piece of bread Serene had provided and nibbled it. Her head still ached, and her body had stiffened up to the point that even breathing wasn't entirely comfortable, but she was determined to make the best of it.
You make me sound like such a renegade, Mom.
It's a family tradition, dear.
Xena's mother smiled at her warmly.
You're just carrying it on in grand style.
Mama, my oogie!
Dory squiggled closer.
Want guff? Make guff come!
Gabrielle reached over and scratched a toddler's back.
We'll find guff when we leave to go home, honey. He doesn't like big cities, she said. And we didn't bring Oogie with us. But if you ask Gamma, she might get you flame ball.
Dory sat up and scowled. Then she squirmed out of her mother's grasp and crawled to the edge of the bed.
Hey, Dory!
Gabrielle started to go after her, then doubled over as a sorely abused body protested.
Stay there.
Serene put a hand on her knee, then got up as Dory reached the edge of the bed and climbed off it, holding onto the covers as she slid to the ground.
Dory, get back here. Where are you? Dory! It's okay.
Gabrielle rolled back upright, swallowing down the jolt of pain and trying to catch her breath.
I think she just wants a toy.
Torn between chasing her grandchild and worrying about Gabrielle, Serene finally compromised by sitting down in the chair between the two of them and keeping an eye on Dory.
Are you sure you want to do this tonight, Gabrielle?
Gabrielle closed her eyes for a moment, then opened them.
I'm fine,
she replied quietly, her eyes on Dory. Determinedly, the toddler ambled over to the wooden floor, eluding her grandmother's hands as she headed for a pile of saddlebags in the corner. She reached the nearest one and took hold of it, tugging it towards her and spilling the content.
Go, 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 go.
She sat down in the pile and started to root through it, getting tangled in one of Xena's shirts, which distracted her for the moment.
Boo, 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 boo.
Irene rested her chin on her fist.
She knows that Xena's?
Gabrielle nodded.
Yeah, she can tell. Maybe it's the scent or something.
They watched the baby disappear inside the volume of fabric, tumbling over onto her back and kicking out inside the shirt. The bard chuckled in reflex. She is so funny.
Serene smiled, as much as that doting fondness in Gabriel's voice, as its baby's antics.
She seems to have taken everything in stride, she commented. Your horrible time today, I mean.
Gods, yes.
Gabriel willingly let herself be distracted.
I was scared. Xena was scared. But her? No way. She had the time of her life riding on Xena's back, going into long, dark tunnels, flying through the air.
The bard gazed at her daughter.
Just one big adventure for her.
Go back!
Dory's head popped through the neck opening in Xena's shirt, and she blinked at them in surprise.
Mama!
She got up and waggled arms, still inside the shirt, then tripped into the long fabric and tumbled back onto the floor.
Mama!
Hush, Dory.
Serene got up, but only got a step towards the child when the door opened and Xena's dark head appeared, followed by her leather-clad body.
What's going on in here?
The warrior demanded.
Boo!
Dory scrambled around on the floor, attempted crawling towards her.
Mama, no get guff! No get oogie! Go bad! Got boo!
Xena crossed over to her and picked her up.
Oh, yeah? What's this? Are you taking up after your mom already, wearing my shirts?
She asked the toddler.
I'm not going to have any clothes left at this rate.
Dory giggled.
Boo, go fly!
She tugged a bit of Xena's leathers.
Go fly! Get oogie! Get guff! Have cookies! Go now!
Hey, you just had cookies!
Gabriel tried not to laugh, because it hurt. But it was hard, because not only was Dory being possibly cute, Xena had a wholehearted grin on her face that made her want to laugh in sheer delight.
You spoiled rotten baby, you.
She's not spoiled.
Xena cradled her daughter, tossing up and catching her.
And where are my cookies?
Huh? She gave her mother and her partner a speculative glare.
Was I talking about her?
Gabriel teased.
Get over here if you want cookies, Moocher Princess. I'm not bringing them over there.
Xena walked over and eased onto the bed, laying down on her side and extended her long legs out. She plopped Dory next to her mother, still wrapped in the shirt, and propped her head up on one hand.
All right. Here I am.
She winked at Cyrene. Thanks for bringing in another snack, mother. The innkeeper resumed her seat and leaned both hands on her knees.
No trouble, honey. I needed a break. My poor friend was having a nervous breakdown before your troop showed up. Now she's hiding under the kitchen workbench, chanting prayers to Hera.
She gave her daughter a wry look.
I can't believe those men took their militia uniforms to sea with them. I can.
Gabriel spoke up before Xena could, mostly because she stuffed the warrior's mouth with a piece of spice cake.
They're very proud of those uniforms.
She popped a bit of cake into Dory's mouth as well, before the toddler could demand it.
Yes, they are.
Cyrene agreed quietly, watching Xena's face. The warrior had snuggled up to Gabriel's shoulder and seemed contented to lay there, accepting tidbits. There was a sense of peace about her daughter that Cyrene hadn't seen for a long time, since before the dark times that had befallen the two of them in the recent years past. She wondered if it was simply relief at Gabriel's recovery and the escape from the day's dangers, or something deeper.
Xena?
Hmm?
The warrior looked over at her, a dark brow lifting in question.
Tell your friend we'll be long gone in a day or so, mother. The militia won't break anything, I promise.
Cyrene smiled.
I'm sure they won't, honey. They're all good boys,
she said.
Have you decided on what you're going to do tomorrow? I heard some of the people in the inn wondering.
Sure.
Xena lifted a hand and felt Gabriel's forehead, then ruffled her hair.
Hate to disappoint them, but I'm going to take all their damn laurel branches home with me and make Dory a treehouse.
Cyrene looked thoughtful.
I had a feeling you'd say that.
She stood up and dusted her hands off.
Though I'm not sure they'll be disappointed exactly,
she added.
Let me go talk to them.
The older woman exited and shut the door behind her. Gabrielle and Xena exchanged glances.
What apples have you shaken down from that tree,
The bard wondered bemusedly. Dory looked up.
Tree?
She recognized the name of a favorite climbing surface.
Yeah.
Xena poked her tongue out a little at the baby.
Would you like a treehouse, Shorty?
Yes!
The response was very positive.
Go now?
Gabriel handed her a piece of cheese.
Soon, sweetie,
she promised.
You have to let me and Boo take care of all these nasty stuck-up people. Then we'll go home, okay?
Dory studied the piece of cheese with a very serious expression.
Then she pulled it to two pieces, ate one, and threw the other one at Gabrielle. It bounced off the barge chest and settled on her stomach. Zina leaned over and captured it in her teeth.
You ready to go?
She asked Gabrielle, chewing the mouthful and swallowing it. Zina exhaled, then nodded.
I'm as ready as I'm going to be today, so let's do it, she decided. Are they ready outside?
Heh, yeah.
Zina grinned wickedly. One blonde eyebrow lifted as Gabrielle regarded her wearily.
Uh-oh. What's that supposed to mean?
She asked.
What trouble have you gotten me into, Zina?
Me?
Big, round-wounded, innocent eyes faced her.
Get you into trouble? Would I do that?
Zina watched her partner's eyebrows narrow in mock suspicion.
Nah.
Relax. Just make sure you give the Amazons a pat on the back for creativity, would ya?
Creativity?
Gabrielle put the remains of their snack away and dusted her shirt front off.
Oh boy.
She sighed, then attempted to remove the shirt from around Dory's body.
Come here, sweetie. Let me get this off you.
No!
Dory clutched at the fabric.
Mine!
Dory, come on now.
Gabrielle scolded her.
That's not yours.
She frowned.
Stop laughing, Zina. It's not funny.
Zina snickered softly.
Mine!
Dory protested fiercely, pulling the sleeve in Gabrielle's grasp with both hands.
Mama, give!
Dory!
Zina took hold of the baby's hands and freed him from the fabric.
Dory, stop.
She lowered her voice meaningfully.
Be nice to your mama. She doesn't feel good.
The warrior had recognized a note of mass frustration in her soulmate's tone.
Boo! Mine!
Dory turned her protest to this new venue.
Oh, yeah? What are you going to do with it?
Zina asked.
Huh?
Wide green eyes studied her in perplexity.
Mine!
For what?
The warrior persisted.
You can't wear it. It's too big.
She held up the sleeve.
How about if I keep it for you till you get older, okay?
Dory pouted. Gabrielle let out a soft laugh, shaking her head.
What are you laughing at?
Zina asked.
Your Royal Majesty, who has an entire press full of my stolen shirts at home?
She pulled the garment off Dory and slung it over her shoulder.
Hmm?
Gabrielle mustered a look of martyred dignity.
I do it for a completely different reason,
she stated loftily. Zina got up and headed for her armor, turning and giving the bard a raised eyebrow, meaningful look as she did so.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Gabrielle smoothed Dory's disheveled hair down with one hand and watched the child capture her arm and start exploring it.
I do it because I love you so much sometimes. I just want to wrap myself up in any piece of you I can get.
Mama loves Boo,
Dory stated, tugging on a thumb.
That's right. I sure do,
Gabrielle agreed.
And so do you, right?
Yes!
Good girl.
The bard smiled at her, then glanced up, watching Zina settle her armor over her shoulders and strap it down. As she turned her head, the candlelight in the room caught on the faintest glint of tears on her cheek. The bard felt a surge of warmth through their connection, seeming uncannily like the gentlest of hugs. Zina remained quiet, however, simply working on lacing up her bracers, her face still and unemotional. She picked up her leg armor and walked over to the bed, sitting down on the edge of it to buckle the heavy metal over her knees and strap it firmly around her boots. Her fingers worked the well-worn leather into brass buckles, shiny from long use, and after she finished, she flexed her hands around the part protecting her knee and slapped it.
Sure wish I'd be wearing this on the road here.
Gabrielle gazed affectionately at her profile.
Zina, I wish I'd been wearing that get-up yesterday,
she admitted,
instead of just jumping headlong into a major fight with just a big stick, which I lost.
The warrior got up and shook herself to settle her armor.
I promise I'll make you another one on the way home.
She walked over and picked up her sword in its sheath, attaching it to the catches in her armor before she turned and faced her partner.
Ready?
A sigh. No.
Gabrielle slowly pulled herself upright.
But we're going, I guess.
She looked at Dory.
You want to come hear me tell a story, honey?
Dory's eyes lit up.
Mama, go story, yes!
She burbled enthusiastically.
Tell cow!
Gabrielle winced as she leaned over, but worked to straighten out the child's bright crimson jumper.
Not tonight, Dory. I'll tell you a new story tonight, okay?
A frown.
It's a good story. You're in the story. Don't you want to hear a story about you?
Dory eyed her doubtfully.
You know, Xena, she looks just like you when she does that.
Gabrielle commented as her partner walked over and knelt next to the bed, pulling the covers back. Feels the same way I do, I guess, she demurred. She's saying, you want to tell a story about me? What's up with that? She slipped the arms under Gabrielle's knees and around her shoulders and stood, lifting the bard easily. Dory, stay right here. I'll be right back for you. Dory squealed in outrage as the warrior started to walk towards the door. She rustled out of the covers and tumbled off the edge of the bed to the floor, getting up and toddling after her two mothers. Never listened. Xena sighed, glancing at Gabrielle's face, which was nestled against her shoulder. One green eye rolled up and looked at her as the baby crashed into her legs from behind, grabbing onto her armor and tugging on it.
I guess she's my kid, eh?
There was a definite twinkle in the eye. Our kid, Xena replied with a smile. She nudged the door open and walked out, with Dory pattering happily after her. And I wouldn't have it any other way. The amphitheater was a study in darkling elegance. The stage was lit by a ring of torches, and there were oil pots stretching up the ramped stone seats that aligned the richly dressed patrons in the lower, closer places, and the more tightly packed ordinary citizens in the rear. The night breeze brought some relief from the heat, but faces were shiny with sweat, and even the sweetest perfumes couldn't entirely mask the scent of too much humidity and too much warmth in close proximity. On the stage, a half a dozen players were emoting to the strains of loud music being played by a band of musicians. Two huge, muscular men stood on either end of the stage, with swords in both hands, twirling them in unison in a very impressive display of skill, the flashing blades capturing the attention of the crowd, some of whom were nodding and tapping to the music. Celeste stepped forward, dressed in robes of shimmering gold. Her hair picked up in the light of the torches and seemed to ignite, suffusing her with glittering sparkles as she forcefully orated a paean to the glory of Athena, speaking of the founding of the great city of Athens. Her voice was full and rounded and very melodious. Behind her, a group of dark-clad, masked, almost animalistic men, clad in furs, crept up behind her, raising weapons in overemphasized threat. The crowd gasped.
Peh, Cyrene whispered to John. Nothing but hot air and goddish swarming.
Joan stifled the yawn, glancing around the crowd.
Folks seem to like it,
he muttered back.
Some folks,
his wife noted cannily.
Not so much the ones from our town.
The play built into its finale, another dozen players rushing on stage in full armor or weapons drawn. The music took on a martial tone, and the warriors attacked the fur-clad men furiously. The thunder of hooves was heard, and suddenly, through the crowd, a man on horseback appeared, riding up the stairs and clattering across the stage. He raced between the fighting warriors and reached Celesta, scooping her up behind him and galloping away, leaping off the stage and almost landing on several rows of watchers. He let Celesta down onto the shoulders of two burly, waiting men, and turned around. Gasps and screams followed him as the battle on stage escalated. The man on horseback jumped the stallion back onto the platform and drew his sword, brandishing it grandly and leading the soldiers forward against the dark-clad rabble. Horns blared, torches flared. The stallion screamed as the music built to a crescendo. The leader of the fur-clad men attacked the man on horseback, and they took center stage, battling back and forth, bellowing loudly. Then the fur-clad leader tripped up the warrior and stood above him, ready to spit him with a particularly huge spear. The music stopped. Everyone on stage froze. Celesta let out a pure, clear note that would have shattered glass if there had been any in the place. The fur-clad man was stricken. He grasped his breast. The warrior jumped up and tackled him, and then the music took up and the torches were doused, and everything rose to a triumphant final, very loud ending. Then the torches were relit, and the audience saw the fur-clad men collapsed on the stage, and the warriors triumphant. They marched over to where Celesta was and lifted her up on her shoulders, parading her around as the audience cheered and clapped. Celesta lifted her arms up and accepted the accolades, her smug smile apparent even from the back of the amphitheater. Roses and other flowers rained towards her as the patrons in the front stood and clapped furiously. Johan rubbed his ear.
Hard to top that loud bit of mess,
he murmured to Cyrene.
I'd hate to have the little one be disappointed in the crowd, her being hurt and all. Maybe it's best if they let it be.
Serene nibbled her lower lip. I don't know, she finally said, then stopped as the older bard, who had been introducing the contestants, stepped to the small podium, stone to the right. The applause tapered off, and the actors trooped off the stage, clustering in a small area just to the left of it. The older bard lifted his hand and waited until the crowd settled down.
You can just give me the badge now, Elenius, Celista called over with a rich chuckle.
The crowd around her laughed.
No one's topped my show.
That may be, Lady Celesta,
the bard acknowledged her with a graceful bow of his head.
Surely it was magnificent.
She accepted the compliment with a smirk.
But that as it may be, we have yet one further entrant,
the elder bard said.
What?
Celesta seemed surprised.
Surely you're jesting. I was the last.
No.
Elenius folded his hands before him.
You only thought you were.
He gazed out over the crowd, which was touch restless, looking around curiously and wondering what was going on. A soft buzz started.
Be at rest, my friends. Take your seats.
A pause.
Open your minds and your hearts, for this bard is not like the others you've seen here tonight.
With that, he simply stepped down and walked to one side, cocking his head patiently and waiting. The crowd settled down to expectant whispered and interested eyes. A drum started. It was soft, with a distant rhythm of knowledgeable fingertips against tightly pulled skin. The sound floated out over the crowd, quieting them just as it took hold of the imagination. From between two pillars, there was a motion. Heads turned. Two women emerged, dressed in Amazon leathers in dark russet and gold, bearing muscular bodies, dripping in colorful feathers and serviceable weapons. On their shoulders rested poles, and between the poles was a woven platform. It was stained in rich earth tones, and as they walked, brightly colored dangling shells clashed softly against each other as they swung from the bottom of the platform. Behind them, two other Amazons held up the rear of the platform, one smaller, one much larger, both with serious expressionless faces.
Who's playing the drum?
Johan whispered curiously to Cyrene.
Xena,
Cyrene answered with a smile.
Got quite the talent there.
Johan grunted, as the intricate beat wound its way through the air, a little daunting, a little seductive. On the platform, seated quietly cross-legged, was Gabrielle. In a startling contrast to her fiercely wild-looking escort, the bard seemed plain and almost unremarkable. Though dressed in a well-fitted tunic, in a color that brought out her fair and good looks, Gabrielle presented the appearance of a young rustic. Until you looked closely, and saw the strength and maturity in the set of her face, and the depth of experience in her mist-green eyes. The torchlight outlined her form, displaying both the whip mark on her face and the softly glowing tattoo on her bare muscular shoulder, along with the laurel branches pinned neatly on the left side of her tunic. A definite, excited buzz rose. Everyone's attention was focused on the approaching platform and its occupant. Several murmurs of Amphipolis went up, but Cyrene got the sense that they really weren't entirely sure of who Gabrielle was. They knew she was the upstart from the games and where she was from, but...
It's a girl from the provinces!
A man next to Cyrene blurted in surprise.
The one who won the running yesterday!
It is!
His companion replied.
Surely she's no bard as well!
The Amazons walked up onto the stage and slowly knelt, letting the platform come to rest on its four sturdy legs, stolen from an end table and fastened securely by Xena's careful hands. As the drum continued, the Amazon settled to the ground to sit cross-legged, watching the crowd with alert eyes. The drum rolled, then fell into silence. Gabrielle straightened a little and let her gaze wander over the audience as the buzz settled and the attention focused on her. She was aware of Celeste's surprised, unhappy, and hostile face off to her left, but she put the woman out of her mind and gathered her focus, bearing down and concentrating as she'd been taught. She let the silence go on a minute, the anticipation building as the crowd waited.
Thank you for welcoming me here.
Her voice was low and as projected as she could manage given her injuries.
My name is Gabrielle, and I'm an itinerant bard from the small town named Potidaea.
It was like cold water shock had gone through the crowd, Gabriel could feel it, the sudden surge of energy as the people recognized her name and responded. Interesting, the bard exhaled. She wished she felt better, so she could enjoy it more.
I don't have any fancy musicians or costumes, Gabriel went on. But I do have a story I'd like to tell you, one that I don't think you've heard before.
There was no restlessness now, just an intent concentration on her, and Gabriel ordered her thoughts, gathered her own energy, and put herself in that place she went to when she was exposing the vision of her dream eye to others.
I'll tell you a story of Athens, the bard began, her voice lifting over the crowd with a gentle power, and of a little town called Amphipolis.
A curious whisper traveled over the crowd, drifting off into the starlit sky.
And what brought a bard and a warrior from there to here, and why?
Zena leaned against the rough surface of a stone pillar and listened, the Amazon drone clasped lightly in one hand and the other resting on Dory's foot. The toddler was sitting on her shoulders with an excellent view of the stage and a sometimes painful grip on the warrior's ears.
Mama,
Dory burbled.
There's Mama.
That's your Mama, all right. Now shh, listen to the story. Zena whispered. Her eyes roamed across the crowd as they listened, watching everything and everyone, taking no chances despite the four Amazons' warriors surrounding her soulmate. Her gaze drifted up over higher levels, stopping when she recognized the face. The firewood seller. Zena's nostrils flared gently, as she thought she could scent him. She could see the whip coiled on his waist, and watched as he pointed at Gabriel, then said something to a neighbor as he smirked.
Boo?
The warrior's hands flexed.
Boo?
Zena took a breath and released it, time enough to deal with him later.
Hmm?
She tweaked Dory's foot.
Good story.
Hmm.
Zena retched her thoughts back to the stage and concentrated on Gabriel's words, which were now shaping their journey in colorful terms.
Yeah, sure is.
She was aware of the crowd leaning forward a little to catch the bard's voice, and also aware of Celeste's set, angry face. The other bard had one of the elders by a toga, arguing with him. The man just kept shrugging and lifting his hands. Zena watched Celeste's expression twist to an ugly hatred. Her own lips edged into a smile. Gabriel felt the sweat gather under her tunic, and she forced herself to focus all the more tightly. It was hard, especially when she had to raise her voice and use her hands to describe their adventures in Athens, and her injuries protested harshly. She was making the wealthy patrons in the front uncomfortable, and she knew it. With a steady voice, she described what they'd seen and how they'd seen it. The child slaves in the stone yards, and the way they'd been treated both on the road and in the city. Beyond the rich, well-dressed faces, though, she could see the masses, whose eyes met hers as she gazed out at them, who knew what she knew, and connected with her as she spoke. She could see heads nodding as she described the docks and the markets, smiles as she pointed out the dark side of the long streets, and the squalor and filth at the bottom of the hills. Celeste was standing to her right. Gabriel caught a glimpse of her as she turned her head, seeing the sneer on her face as the woman watched her. Her players were gathering around her, also staring at the bard, doing their best to be intimidating. They whispered amongst themselves and pointed, and laughed behind their hands, trying to rattle her as they caught her eye. It might have worked, Gabriel reflected, since she was hurting and tired, and it had been a damn long day. She was not immune to her own self-doubts, after all, and Celeste's show had been well done and really kind of entertaining. It had been calculated to appeal to the rich men and women in the front rows, and impress the provincials in the back. Gabriel thought it had done both, and knew what she had to offer would have no beautiful costumes or striking music. All she had was the truth, and sometimes that just wasn't nearly enough. Gabriel sucked in a breath and tried to muster some energy, feeling the sarcastic eyes boring through her. From the corner of her vision, she spotted the motion as her adversary took one hold of one of the players, whispered, then shoved him off towards the exit. And with an unpleasant smile, he went. Now what? Gabriel wondered. She shot a glance to her right, and her eyes met Celeste's. The other bard stared at her. No, through her. Then behind Celeste and her group, a tall figure stepped out, slid silently into view. Hidden from most of the audience, by a stone pillar but very visible to Gabriel, seeming larger than life yet familiar to her as her own heart, the bard found herself smiling, as she straightened up a little and she got ready to draw her audience into the next part of the story.
And so, On this hot morning, I walked through the marketplace and found not peace, but anger.
Gabrielle steeled herself and slowly stood up, hoping her legs would hold her.
Instead of good merchants free to sell their wares, the center of the market was blocked.
A breath.
Blocked by a man with hatred in his heart and trouble in his hand, who was beating a lad, hardly more than a child, there in that marketplace before my very eyes.
A slave!
A voice rang out anonymously and unexpected. A boy!
Gabriel's voice rose and took on more strength.
Who had done nothing to be beaten for, and lay there unresisting as people looked on, or walked by.
She spread her arms out.
So, should I have done the same?
There was an awkward silence.
Would you have done the same?
Gabriel's tone dropped a bit, floating out across the stillness.
Our laws are clear! You broke them!
The same voice interjected. The bard realized it was coming from, unsurprisingly, Celestis' corner.
Laws are meant to protect us, not enslave us, Gabriel replied. And if the laws of Athens, the great capital Athens, say that boys can be beaten for no cause, then those laws are unjust, and it was my privilege to break them.
Zena smiled visibly.
In my life, I have seen so much unjustness, the bard went on. So many times when what was law and what was right diverged, it made me choose to either follow the law or follow my heart.
Her eyes roamed the crowd, sensing the tendrils of contact between her and them, as her words caught their consciousness and tightened their focus on her.
I learned to follow my heart, even when doing that broke it sometimes.
She felt the jolt of her words through her link with Zena.
But I never regretted it.
Gabriel spoke into the now charged silence.
So I don't regret putting myself between that boy and the bully whipping him.
She took a slow step forward, not feigning the effort. Zena's fingers twitched, curling towards her palm as she just barely kept herself from going to her soulmate's side. She could see what the performance was costing Gabriel, and it occurred to her more than once that the rows of stuck-up snitwads weren't nearly worth it.
Should have just killed her,
Celesta whispered, not two body lengths in front of her.
I can't believe they're sucking this up. Look at them.
Soundlessly, Zena moved, gliding a few steps closer, glad she left Dory in her mother's arms.
Well, it is sort of interesting,
the young man, one of the sword wielders, said. Celesta backhanded him.
Moron.
But then the crowd decided to take out their frustration, and there was all of them, and only one of me.
Gabriel's voice drifted over.
All I remember for that is lots of hard fists and heavy sticks, and how much it hurt.
The crowd shifted a little, uncomfortable.
And then it got dark.
Gullible fools,
Celesta hissed, unaware of the shadow, not just behind her.
I woke up in a horrible place, Gabriel told them. There was no light, just a sound of suffering all around me, and the smell of death.
The bard was visibly trembling, and she slowly sat down on the pallet.
Bugs were everywhere, and I could hear rats coming closer.
Oof!
One of the players winced.
That sounds gross. Shut up!
Celesta snarled at him.
She's lying, you fool. It never happened.
I knew if I passed out again, maybe they'd think I was dead,
Gabriel said.
Maybe I'd be dinner.
The crowd cringed visibly, but seemed wholly absorbed.
But then someone called out to me,
the bard went on.
It was amazing, hearing the voice of a friend in that dark place, and I called back to my friend Homer, who was in the cell right next to me.
Celesta stiffened. A whisper went from the front of the crowd, Homer's name being traded back and forth.
I was glad to hear him,
Gabriel spoke quietly.
Though I did wonder why a bard like Homer was in an awful place like that.
She let the question penetrate for a moment.
Does anyone here know why?
Silence.
Bitch!
The Athenian bard spoke almost under her breath.
Poor Homer,
Gabriel said.
He'd been there so long, in that horrible cell. I felt bad about being there, but I felt worse for him, because I knew that even though I was in the darkest, deepest cell in the lowest, most horrible prison.
She took a breath and let the anticipation build, watching the bodies facing her lean forward slightly.
Someone was coming for me.
The bridge of Xena's nose wrinkled a little. And I knew there was no prison tough enough, no bars thick enough, no army bold enough to stop that someone. The bard smiled gently. They would find me. Crowd's attention was now completely focused on Gabrielle, waiting for the next bit of story.
Sheep,
Celesta muttered. Gabrielle rested her elbows on her knees and leaned forward.
And they did, she said. Out of the darkness, I heard the sound of fighting far over our heads, clashes of steel, and the noises of bodies hitting stone and wood and each other.
Her hands shaped themselves around a sword hilt.
I heard a sword fight, loud and fierce, and the yells of people as they battled each other, and their boots making scuffing noises on the floor as they kicked stuff down through the trapdoor over my head.
Xena blinked, barely remembering that fight herself, as she plowed through the defenders almost without pausing.
There were so many guards.
A dozen at least, though in the dark it had been hard to tell. She just kept punching and kicking, pulling limbs and throwing bodies, and...
And only one hero, but that hero was my hero. And before I knew it, the top of my cell was open, and two bodies were falling inside, all the way to the stone floor, not very far from where I was lying.
Hero, give me a break,
Celesta said.
Murdering whore.
Long fingers twitched again, closing into fists.
Two fell, but only one got up,
Gabrielle said, glancing to her right, meeting Xena's eyes.
And I knew I was safe.
She shifted her attention back to the audience.
Now, we just had to find a way out of the deep cell in a dark prison with lots of angry guards in it.
A snap of her fingers, a reflection of smiles from the crowd.
Piece of cake.
What's the damn fascination?
Celesta said in a disgusted whisper. Truth? Xena almost said it out loud.
There was a little complication, Gabrielle went on. In the fight, a fire got started, she inhaled. So now we had the enemy that was worse than the guards and lots more dangerous.
And Gus, get around back there and start up a loud argument with Bella,
Celesta ordered.
Distract the crowd.
But
we've got to stir this up. Break their concentration. They're getting too involved in this dreck, and I won't have any of them to think that it's worth of being in this challenge. Understand me?
The woman gave him a shove.
Celesta, you can't just...
Celesta tangled her hands in the throat of his toga, pulling him upwards a little and snarling into his face.
Do it, or I'll make sure your next job you have is on the docks where you come from, you little maggot.
She released him and gave him another push. The man hesitated. A very low voice cut through their argument.
Do it, and I'll make sure the next job you have is taking tokens for Charon on the River Styx boat ride.
Celesta whirled. Gabrielle's voice rose a little.
So, there was a rope hanging from the cell trap, and Xena leapt up and caught it, with me on her back, and...
A soft gasp came for the crowd.
They tried to throw us back down into the fire, but...
Xena leaned against the pillar and crossed her arms over her chest.
You have no right to interfere,
Celesta hissed.
I'll call the guards.
No, you won't, the warrior said, unless you want them to hear about your abduction and imprisonment of Homer.
Xena's eyes frosted over.
You little piece of scum.
Just as we got clear, the fire flared up, and we had nowhere to go but a little storeroom. So we got inside there, but there was no way out.
A gasp.
So we were trapped, the three of us.
Three?
A woman in the front uttered.
Xena, and me, and our little daughter, Dory.
The bard gently explained.
She is just two. She was with Xena when I was attacked and beaten and taken to jail.
Mama!
A piping voice suddenly rang out. Everyone's head turned, then swiveled back to Gabrielle. A ripple of sound settled to silence as everyone waited.
I thought we were going to die there, all of us, Gabrielle said. The smoke was coming in, and it was getting so hot. She gazed quietly at her clasped hand. You know, I've been in dangerous places many times in my life, and I'm no stranger to death.
You could hardly hear a breath as the bard paused, and the sounds of the street outside the amphitheater floated gently in on the warm breeze.
But it was hard to look at my little girl and know she would never grow up.
A pause.
Hard to think of all the friends I'd be leaving behind.
Now Gabrielle glanced to her right and left, where Effinen and Epony were sitting like stone images on either side of her.
And all for what? A few bets?
Gabrielle lifted her head and looked across the crowd.
A contest?
A slight shake of her fair head.
Someone's pride?
There was a soft rustle of motion as Gabrielle slowly stood up again and straightened painfully.
It seemed so little to die for, she said, but I was with those I loved most in the world, and so many people die alone, so I was, at least, glad that my last moments would be filled with more love than most people in all their lives.
She gazed out at them with quiet honesty, seeing the glint of torchlight on tear-stained cheeks. Celeste stared at Xena, who stared stonily back at her. The players watched them uneasily for a moment, then turned their attention back to the stage, irresistibly drawn to Gabrielle's tale.
I'm not going to let some two-bit provincial from the sticks takes what's mine,
the Athenian bard said in a low voice.
I don't care what it takes, and I don't care who or what you think you are. You don't frighten me.
But you know,
now a touch of faint, amused self-deprecation entered Gabrielle's voice, gathering in the crowd effortlessly.
The fates can surprise you sometimes. She cupped her hands. As we took our last faint chances on that hard floor, covered with a wet blanket, one of the rats I had been fearing not so long before ran over my leg and away.
A faint surprised chuckle floated from the audience.
It's not me you need to worry about.
Xena smiled unpleasantly.
All I can do is break every bone in your body.
The warrior indicated her partner with a jerk of a chin.
She can steal every heart out there, and you can't do anything about it.
Celeste ripped her gaze from the warrior's face and turned to look at the crowd.
My daughter thought it was a toy.
Gabrielle lifted her hands a little.
So she went after it, and Xena went after her, and they chased the rat through a straw and over the stone and behind a big crate. And I heard the fates laugh as they chased that rat right into a hidden tunnel.
Now a louder chuckle, surprised and muted, delighted.
The fire was coming, the smoke was filling the room. We could hear the walls collapsing around us, but Xena got us all inside the tunnel and blocked the end up. We knew it wouldn't hold the fire forever, but that's how life is sometimes. You're a tiny step ahead of disaster, and you learn to just keep walking.
Another laugh. Gabrielle visibly relaxed a little. She could sense interest, admiration, and intense curiosity from her audience now, and she knew she had them in her hands. The stars overhead twinkled brightly, and a cool breeze ruffled the torches around the perimeter, and all eyes were fastened on the stage. They were her for the taking. Now the hard part started. She drew in a breath and paused, discomfort aside, spreading her arms out to gather them in.
We could hear the roar of the fire through the walls, and in front of us, through the grate, flames appeared.
Xena stood quietly to one side, now visible to the crowd, allowing the bard's words to paint her in a brilliant wash of heroism. The breeze stirred her dark hair and made shadows dance from the torches light across her brass armor, and standing there against the white stone, she seemed indeed larger-than-life figure shaped from Gabrielle's imagination. It was a night they'd all remember, of that she was damn sure.
And there we are, all in that room, the fire behind us and a locked door in front of us.
Gabrielle drew in a breath.
We'd just been keeping one step ahead of the flames, and now we were one last dead end with the guards and the other prisoners.
She took a step forward.
The guards were angry.
The bard's voice dropped a little.
They were angry at us, at Xena, because the people outside had locked them in.
Why?
A woman in the front row asked, followed by others.
Senseless!
Why?
Gabrielle paused, seeming to reflect on the question.
Because they wanted to make sure we didn't get out to join the games.
She let the words drop into a sudden quiet.
They didn't realize about the fire.
A pause.
I hope they didn't realize.
A low murmur rose.
But I wasn't worried, because I knew Xena wouldn't let all those people get hurt,
the bard went on.
First, though, she had to convince the guards to listen to her, and that wasn't easy. They were very angry, and like angry people do, sometimes. They weren't thinking of what was best for them. They were thinking about relieving the hurt they felt inside.
A pause.
I did.
Xena felt eyes tracked to her.
Xena knew we didn't have time for that, though. She convinced them to stop and to look
and to listen to the fire that was coming up from the depths of the prison after us. We had to find a way out of there, or the flames would fill the hall, and we'd all die there.
The crowd sucked in a group breath.
The door was wood and very stout. All the beating we could do on it would never even crack it. The guards had been trying, but they hadn't even made a dent.
Gabrielle told them.
Wood clubs were useless, hands even more so. But there was, in that hall, Xena something new that she could use. Columns of stone. The bard looked up as though seeing them. Big enough and heavy enough to knock the doors right down. The trick was, how do you use it?
Xena found herself experiencing a wholly guilty, though completely enjoyable, sense of pleasure as she listened to her partner describe her cleverness in getting all of them out of that prison trap. After all, the solution had not only been effective, it had been visually striking as she accomplished her part in, well, in quite a bit of style. They'd been in grave danger, sure, but that backflip off the column hadn't been in the cause of efficiency. Now had it? She half-turned as someone stepped up behind her, then relaxed as she recognized Homer. The bard had gotten cleaned up and shorn, and was dressed in a simple toga, not unlike many of the other bards from the academy, who were now clustering around the stage listening to Gabrielle. Celesta was sitting on a wooden chair, placed nearby for her by her servants, her face stony and cold. Xena reflected that watching the obnoxious woman get beaten mercilessly by Gabrielle's raw talent was almost as satisfying as slugging her in the mouth would be. Almost.
You know,
Homer's voice caused her to turn and regard him.
Gabrielle once told me that as a bard, she had the easiest place on earth.
He said,
stories just fell in her lap.
Yeah,
Xena replied quietly. But the downside is, she also has to live through them.
Homer considered that in silence for a moment, then nodded.
Having lived through one myself now, I have a new appreciation of that.
He studied Gabrielle's visibly battered form.
Of her.
He lifted his eyes to Xena's face.
And of you.
And with everyone helping, the stone column started to swing, Gabrielle was saying. It hit the door with incredible sound, and parts of the wood started to come off, she told him, then turned and looked behind herself. But the fire was coming up the stairs and filling the room behind us. She faced them again. It was so loud. I almost couldn't hear the ram hitting the door, and it was horrible, hungry sound.
Xena felt the hairs on her arms lift at the memories the words evoked.
How awful would it have been to have come this far and done so much, only to fail at the end?
Gabrielle asked them, lifting her hand slightly.
I could feel it getting a lot hotter, and parts of the roof over us started to fall down as they got burnt, and now we wondered if the wood the stone was hanging from would collapse before we could get the door open.
The bar lit her eyes roam over the crowd, meeting their gaze unflinchingly.
I almost felt like everything was against us, wanted us to be trapped there, wanted to destroy all of us.
She lifted her hands and curled them into fists.
And just when I thought that, the stone hit the door one last time, boomed one last time, and while the wood support was cracking, it broke the door open in front of us.
Everyone let out a breath, as though they'd been holding it while she spoke. Maybe they had.
The fire wanted that air as much as we did, though, and it rushed after us as we ran outside, Gabrielle said. I almost felt like it was angry because it lost us.
A smile.
But it did, and the feeling of the wind on my face, the sweetest thing on earth.
The bard slowly walked forward, coming to the very edge of the platform.
Life won, death lost, and in losing, has to gnash his teeth and listen to me tell of its defeat.
She looked out over the crowd.
Can you hear death's frustration? It is out there, among you.
There was a dead silence for a moment.
The world holds still when you realize someone has placed a value on your life,
Gabrielle whispered to it.
Because it's then that you realize what value you place on it.
She held the position for a few heartbeats, then stepped back and indicated the end of the tale with a simple duck of her head. A few more heartbeats of peace were left to her before she felt the change in the air pressure as a thunder of sound blasted her senses. Gabrielle's mind recognized the sound as applause, but the volume was like nothing she'd ever heard, and she lifted her eyes to gaze in startled surprise at the mass of people clapping and cheering as they stood. It was nice. But the pain she held at bay during her tale started catching up with her, and she turned and went back to her pallet on shaking legs, sitting down on it
and resting her elbows on her knees.
You okay?
Ephany whispered anxiously.
Gab?
Yeah, the bard. She lifted her head and looked back out at the still cheering crowd.
Guess I did okay, huh?
Gabriel felt the sweat drench to her body and drip into her eyes. She blinked and rubbed the back of her hand over them. A small snorting laugh escaped the Amazon region. The crowd surged forward, along with a thick cluster of other bards she'd been gathering near the edge of the stage. But before they could reach her, Gabriel felt the welcome presence at her back, and she turned her head as Xena's hands fell on her shoulders.
Hi.
That was gorgeous,
Xena told her, reaching over to push a bit of the sweat dampened hair out of Rai's.
I loved every minute of it.
She unhooked the water skin at her belt and offered it to her partner.
Here.
Gabriel's eyes brightened perceptibly, and a grin appeared. She sucked at the water skin thirstily as she watched Tina regard their surroundings.
Think you want it?
Eponin asked idly, eyeing the oncoming crowd with a bemused expression.
Couldn't care less, Gabriel responded. Said what I had to. That's what mattered.
She let the skin drop and leaned back against Zena's body, drained and hurting. An arm circled the waist and she let her eyes close, holding the memory of the night tightly to her as one of the special times of her life. To be continued.
Well, that concludes episode number 96 of XNU and almost all of chapter or part 11 of A Matter of Pride by Melissa Good. And, wow, this is a very long episode. I'm quite impressed with myself. But you guys were due for a long episode, and hopefully you'll enjoy this. Yes, and the song you hear on this week's show is The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony. I'm sure most of you recognize it. As usual, if you have any announcements for either the upcoming Xena convention or announcements in regards to birthdays, wedding anniversaries, or dedications or for songs, send an email to me at xena.uber@gmail.com. If you have a book recommendation or a song recommendation or even a movie recommendation, as usual, xena.uber@gmail.com. We're gearing up for our 100th episode. Actually, four more episodes from here, or actually three and then the 100th episode. Please send in any stories that you might have written, whether it be one page, two page, or possibly even three pages, so that I can read it on the show, because I'm going to try and get actually a few stories in for the show, maybe one or two, and actually would be nice to give you two different stories at the same time. Even if it runs more than an hour or 2 hours, it's okay. It's going to be the 100th episode, so I'm going to hopefully have quite a few good things going on. And, yeah, and also continue sending in your recipes. I've got quite an eclectic collection of recipes, so send them in, you know, and I'm going to post them up and get a section on the blog for you so that if you want to check out some recipes, if you're sitting around and you want to cook something, but you want to do something extravagant or something simple, but something different nevertheless, you can look on there and have that. So everyone, until the next episode, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.